Welcome to Rewatchable, episode 173. We're back to talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, season 4, episode 6, Wild at Heart, and Angel, season 1, episode 6, Sense and Sensitivity. My name is Selena. I have fellow host and superfan. What is your name? Karen. My mind went Kristen, Katie, Caitlin, Karen. I'm not used to saying your name in the show, so I get confused. Karen is here. And Kristen and Mitchell. Oh my God. And Mitch. What is happening? Everything is out of whack. Kristen and Mitch are our newbies. It's been a while, clearly.
It has. It definitely has.
Yes. I don't even remember what shows we're talking about. I'm like, Buffy, what is that? I have no idea. But yeah, this is only like the second time me and Karen have been on an episode together, I think.
This is a rarity.
It is, but of course we are talking about a very special episode for, not the Angel one, the Buffy one, obviously. So it's good that we have, that we're here to talk about Oz and Willow and all that heartbreak. I just watched the episode and I'm still so devastated.
I wish Adiana was on here for it with me, because my God, that was so much fun planning that, Karen. Like, you know, saying all that we thought was going to happen and then bam.
But before we do that, obviously, we want to remind you of the contact information, which is, if you want to give us your spoiler-free thoughts on Buffy Season 4 and Angel Season 1, where we're up to at this point, you can do so by emailing rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter @re_watchable. You can find this post on hyperbole.com, and you can find us on Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And as well, before we get into start talking about Buffy, we want to give you some fun fact. If you still don't know the sound of our voices, this is your chance. So you make sure you know who Mitch is. Very important. So Mitch, why don't you go first and give us your fun fact?
But mine's not fun. Okay, I'll go. I'm getting my tonsils taken out, and that's happening on August 23rd. So I won't be able to speak for a week, meaning you'll have approximately no downtime on your end, Rewatchable listeners, because that'll probably just be an off week for me, hopefully. And I don't know if it's like gonna change my voice. I don't think it does. But I remember, like, there was an episode of Hey Arnold that I watched as a kid where Gerald got his tonsils taken out, and then after he got them taken out, his voice was no longer raspy, but he could sing really low and deep in the chorus, and that was like a thing. So maybe I'll come back.
I hope that happens to you.
maybe I'll come back and I'll have like really low tones to my voice that I already don't. That'd be pretty cool.
Be like, hey guys, I'm Mitch.
Be like Hodor or something. I'm sure he has a low voice, right? I don't watch the show.
No.
So that's not fun, not but <really. laughs> you gotta do it sometimes. So, alas, and this is like, I just worry because it's like, Rewatchable is like my whole like being. Like, if I don't have Rewatchable, I'm nothing. So if I couldn't speak, you know, like, I gotta get healed up real quick after it, so I can come on back and talk about my ships.
Oh, of course. Very important. You keep the ship flags flying, so we do need you back for that.
I mean, I need to keep rooting for Cuffy, honestly. That was my pilot OTP, and still, I'm rooting.
Yep. Good ship to root for. So that was hilarious. I don't know if you have anything to beat that, Karen.
To beat it? No, not hilarity-wise, but I will tell you that my passion for volleyball is as strong as ever, and as Kristen can attest, I am obsessed with both beach volleyball and indoor volleyball during these Olympic times, and I just cannot get enough of it. I'm so excited.
Cool. And Kristen?
Yes, my fun fact was going to be Karen watching volleyball is equal to me watching football. Like, I get very vocal and, like, I yell at the TV and talk to the TV, and Karen, like, yesterday from my room, because I was catching up on Buffy, I could hear her like, oh yeah, oh come on, and I'm like, oh, it's Karen. Karen does sport, and it's really funny, and it's really enjoyable. We've had a lot of fun watching the Olympics so far, so there will be a lot more tonight.
Awesome. Well, how you feel about football, I feel about Buffy. And I don't have a fun fact. I'm not fun. But I did want to ask you guys a question, spend my 2 minutes on that, which is, I don't know if it's just me, because I just moved to a new apartment and we got better internet. And I was watching these two episodes, especially Buffy Wild at Heart. And the quality was amazing. It was so... it looked like modern TV, and I don't know, has it always been like this? Is it just me?
I noticed it too, honest to God. Right? I was looking at that episode last night thinking, this is shot really beautifully. It's like, Willow especially, like, so every crisp. Time she was on screen, I was like, something about the camera they used or the stock they used, I don't know, but it was really, really nice, and I did notice it too, so it wasn't just you.
We should probably wait a second on this conversation, because there's a bit in the listener feedback about this.
Really? Okay.
Well, this is very important.
I was just wondering if
I'm glad you noticed.
We can go back to that later. But I was just wondering because I don't know if it's been like this all season or if it's literally just this episode.
It just happened in the bronze. A couple days ago.
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay. Well, we will get back to that. I'm glad that because I thought it was just my crappy internet before.
No.
But this
funny.
Is gonna make watching Buffy like I thought it was just like, oh my god, this is what good internet is like. This is gonna make watching Buffy a lot more fun because it is. I guess when you watch old shows, like when you're used to really clean, crisp quality, and can like kind of take you out of it when it's like real grainy and stuff. And Buffy season 4 in general is a lot lighter because a lot more happens during the day this season as opposed to the last seasons, especially 2 was so dark.
Yeah,
so
Angel.
Yeah. So it's like it's just really nice to watch it like it's a new show because then I feel like it's sort of. It's a little bit easier to watch. For me, everything I watch is terrible quality because of my bad internet, so it hasn't bothered me, but okay. Good to know. I'm glad that
you're on
that
the right track. You guys I'll give you that much.
Too. We're moving into Buffy season episode 4, season 6, Wild at Heart, where something really sad happens that has kind of been foreshadowed through most of season 4, so it's interesting watching it finally come to a very literal head. This episode. But before we dive in, I suppose the synopsis must be read aloud. Is it yours, Mitch?
Yes, it was my turn.
I expect so, based on the profanity and the Twilight references, so I will do my best to get through it.
Sometimes Adiana switches it up so that you would think it was me, but it was still her, because she would do the same. Twilight references and all.
Yeah, let's keep it PG, guys. This is Buffy, not like...
I mean, we have
Sensei,
in the past,
guys.
But like, if you want to like start from here... That's cool.
Yes.
We can probably just
new image quality, new podcast.
New image quality,
profanity,
new
yeah. quality.
Higher standards, people. We have higher standards.
I don't know about that, but
well, we'll see how we go. Well, let me read the synopsis so we can get into talking about this episode. So, in this episode, Oz Fs Renesmee repeatedly and then rips her throat out. When his imprinting has had enough, our favorite teen werewolf romps with lead singer Veruca whilst transformed. She sort of convinces him that the beast is always active, and when Willow finds out about it all, she nearly Anyas him. Veruca attacks Willow, but Oz transforms and ends the wench. Disturbed by the violence of how good them she-wolf romps were, Oz leaves Sunnydale to pursue his own spin-off, or maybe just Angel? Only time will tell. ... Okay, so here we are. Raise your hand if you're heartbroken right now. I'm raising my hand.
Nearly cried.
Of course.
Hand right. in air, yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh. How's
I've never
that?
Cried at Buffy yet, but like I got real close here.
Oh my gosh. I've been closer. I think Jenny's death still and Giles's reaction will get me every time and a couple of other moments. But this is when Willow cries. We talk about this all the time. When Willow cries, we cry, like Karen also says. But I mean, I guess, you know, our first point in the doc is sort of Ariana and Mitch wanting to pat themselves on the back. But I actually wanted to ask, first of all, Karen, if you remember, and Kristen, did you kind of feel like this was what Veruca was introduced to do? Because I know I did when I watched it, yeah.
Well, from that first, like, moment that Oz and Veruca, before they've even, like, met, when he first sees her in the quad and, like, he can sense something, you know that she's there as a foil or at least as a complication for Willow and Oz. Like, it's clear. So it was kind of just a matter of time before something like this happened.
Mm-hmm. I can see why you were laughing at us, Karen, now. We were saying, and then the baby rips out of her stomach like the movie Alien. Because we were like, close, but we took it too far.
Just a little bit, Mitch. Just one step.
No, I was like hooting and hollering the whole episode. I was like, get her! Woo!
That's so sad.
No, more like during the killing parts.
Oh my god.
I was happy we were right, but then I was like, yeah.
Yeah. Right, you were definitely right. Like, she was, as we know, she was a werewolf like Oz. And I think, you know, that sort of first glimpse of them looking at each other, like you guys like rightly interpreted, that was definitely a werewolf sensing another werewolf part. And you can almost kind of see the way that she looks, you know?
I never would have noticed a single damn thing if Natalie didn't point it out. She goes, what about that girl he looks at? And I'm like, oh, the girl he imprinted on? And she's like,
oh, Natalie.
And I was just like, yeah, the one she Well, it's not like, I think I would have remembered back eventually, because I'm pretty sure they showed like a flashback of it in a previously on. No, it was just like that theory was just so nonchalant for me. I was just like, eh, whatever, it'll happen eventually. And then it was such a thing in this episode, and I was just like, I really didn't expect it to be like Oz and Willow break up, Oz leaves the show. Like, I expected it to just kind of be like, I don't know, a little fight, like a little tiff, and, you know, Ruka would still be around and maybe join the Scoobies or something. But like, this totally went a different direction than I expected, and that was kind of fun.
Wow. So are you guys sort of surprised by, like, the abrupt exit of Oz?
I was definitely surprised with how far it went in one episode. Like, they basically went from, like, there's this chick who's kind of around to, hey, let's spend all night together as werewolf, you know, people. And then, ta-da, I have to leave. I, you know, killed her. Like, it spiraled very quickly. It took me a little bit by surprise that it happened so fast. I think I kind of expected Veruca to be a little more of a pain for a little longer, rather than this is the episode where her story, like, beat starts and ends, basically.
Right. I think, like, selfishly, I'm glad it happened so fast, because Veruca is one of the characters on TV that I hate the most. Like, it's just the way she moves her neck. I'm like, oh, you know, and also the fact she breaks up Oz and Willow doesn't help, but she just bugs me, so I'm glad she's gone. But like, yeah, the head tilt, the werewolf, I am a werewolf head tilt.
You know you want me. And I'm like, ugh.
I'm a werewolf and I'm about to transform.
Yeah, like in the end.
Yeah.
It's incredible how annoying she is, I agree.
But no, and I think for us super fans, and you can weigh in on this too, Karen, I think the fact that this is the episode where it all culminates, sort of, for me, I like the pacing of it, because I think it makes total sense for, I mean, Oz has been dealing with these feelings for a while, but we haven't been privy to them because we're not privy to Oz's feelings like that. And then when it erupts, when he does this thing, when he sleeps with Veruca and kills her, it's too much for him. He has to leave. That's the kind of character he is. So for me, it makes sense, but it might also be just because I've had like 15 years to process it, or however the hell long it's been.
Yeah, it makes sense to me, too. I don't like Veruca either. I really don't like this episode. Not because it's a bad episode. It is an excellent episode. But it breaks your heart. It just shatters it into a million pieces.
That's why I love it, but I understand.
But when you're dealing with Oz, this perfect little person who is so sweet and genuine, and then all of a sudden he's not necessarily the bad guy, but he's obviously keeping something from Willow, and you just want to cheer them on. And then, you know, it's like misstep after misstep, and it gets so frustrating. I hate miscommunication tropes. I hate when somebody keeps a secret, especially when they don't even really have a good reason to do that. Like, if he had just told everybody what was going on, I think things would have happened differently. But, you know, it is what it is. It is an excellent episode, but you're really sad after watching this one.
Yeah. People, but I think it makes sense. You know, like, I really do think that, like, in this case, what was he going to say? Yeah, this girl, and I'm, like, really attracted to her. I think she might be a werewolf. Like, I don't know, you know?
In the Buffyverse, though, that's not an odd conversation. Like, I think he could have done that.
Maybe. He was probably just, that's the Oz way, though. Hope it goes away. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I think he never would have acted on any of this if it hadn't been the wolf. But, and that's another thing I love about this, is that I feel like Oz is never really in the wrong. Like, you are absolutely right. He should have told her, especially after that first time. But he's so conflicted, and he's so like, but I didn't really do it. It was my wolf self. Like, I know it's going to break Willow's heart. What am I going to do? And all of that sort of, it's a very, even though it's like werewolves and stuff, it's very relatable, and you feel both sides of this thing. Like, there isn't a clear villain other than stupid Veruca, which I like. In these kind of situations, you know?
It's the perfect, like, that whore name. Like, and it's not... I guess I shouldn't say whore. That's not a good thing to say. I should say, like, no, you know, the girl who comes in... The girl who comes in and, like, messes up the relationship kind of deal. Like, I feel like in pop culture, sometimes you have those names where you hear it, and you're just like, oh, Veruca's gonna come in here and mess everything up. She's the girl you love to hate. Just the name, the way she acts, it's all about, like, I think... making his hater the most that we possibly can. But to me, it's like it's as Karen was saying, sad to have the trope of Oz not telling Willow all the information and miscommunicating things to her, keeping things to her from her, when I still think, I'm with you, Karen, that he should have told Willow, I'm having feelings for her. Whenever that happens in a TV show, I start to feel like they're just trying to write a character off or put distance between two characters that were really close together because they needed to, not because they absolutely knew how to, but because they just felt that there was a direction the show needed to go in, so they forced it in a really awkward way.
Well, I definitely disagree with that. I absolutely do not think it was I thought it was really well done, but of course, like, we can all have different opinions, but I liked it. Let's see. Well, exactly. Well, we have another point in the doc here, which is, you know, you write, our poor Willow, she says that what her and Xander did doesn't compare. And what are our thoughts on that? So what are you guys' thoughts on that?
It's apples and oranges, right? Like, we can't compare them.
No, but you can't, because on one hand you have Oz and Xander, no, wait, Willow and Xander, not Zaz, who have, Zaz. Like, these, like, especially on Willow's part. I know, right? That's next year. But no, I hope that, like, I was going to say, on Willow's part, those feelings for Xander were brewing for so long, and and they never did anything other than kiss, but it was a very different situation, where here on Oz's part, he has no emotional feelings for Veruca, but he has all that, like, literal animal passion for her, and that's what he acts on.
I thought that I was under the impression, for some stupid reason, which is so wrong, because Willow loses her virginity to Oz, that Willow and Xander got together and slept together. But now that I can see that difference, I can see why it's less.
It's less, but it's also more, because there were a lot more emotion involved. And I think that's also what she's saying, is that what she did, and you might argue that's a bigger betrayal, like it's an emotional betrayal, but she acted out of feelings, and they hadn't been dating that long. But I think really this thing, she was just reacting because he threw that back in her face. You know, I don't know. It's an interesting.
Did you have the right to do that? Was that okay? I think, like, if someone does something wrong, they shouldn't try and hurt the person they're trying to apologize to.
No, but at the same time, it's not fair for her to hold him to this standard that she couldn't meet. Like, she messed up, and here's Oz, you know, she's seeing with her own two eyes that Oz messed up. And so he throws it in her face, and of course she's going to be defensive about it. Like, I don't think it's wrong on either part, because she couldn't live up to that standard, and Oz can't either here. So it's just one of those complicated situations where, yeah, he probably shouldn't have thrown it in her face, but I can see why he did, because... You know, he's trying to defend himself and say, I didn't mean, like, you know, this isn't the same thing. I wasn't emotionally attached to Veruca. It's the wolf, you know? So it's just hard.
Yeah. And it's a nice situation, because there isn't a right answer, you know, because, yeah, like you said, there you see both of their sides. I really enjoy that, too.
And what does this say about Woz? Does this mean that they're not even a couple that we can ship, because they're...
No.
Always cheating on each other, or hiding things from each other, or not being 100% what they should be together? Is this a thing that happens in real life? Do people have both spouses cheat on each other and they somehow come back together? Like, are we going to see Woz in the future now? I don't know if I should even care to see that again.
I mean, did Oz ever... That's another question. Did Oz really cheat on Willow? Well, I guess he did. But it was the wolf that cheated on Willow, right?
He was human when he made the last decision, because the first time he was a wolf and he happened to find her after they were attacking the teacher. But this time, the second time around, it was like he was in the cage and he said, "Come on in." And whether or not he was about to transform or whether or not the beast is always within him, that's arguable. And I think that that's part of what the episode is telling us was the reason that he had to leave, because now we're seeing him make a really bad decision while he's not transformed yet, and that's like, oh my god, yeah, the beast is totally there still.
As far as like whether or not we can and should or whatever ship was, gosh,
it's so, not Olo.
It makes me think of an Australian Wozniak. Soda. It makes me think of Wozniak from like Apple, and it's weird. Anyway. I mean, they started dating pretty young, and they've learned from these mistakes they've made. Like, Willow learned a lot about herself and about being in a relationship and about Oz from the mistake she made with Xander. And I think that whatever happens here in the future, Oz will definitely learn from it, as will Willow. So as long as they continue to learn from these mistakes and move forward and have healthy communication, there's no reason why they couldn't be together. It's just, you know, these were young larks and mistakes that they made, and they have to decide together how they're going to handle it. So hopefully we'll see Oz again, because I love him.
I love him too. And that was a really good point. I think that's really, really good perspective. So, I mean, we have a couple of questions. I guess we kind of already covered the one where Oz should be held responsible for what he did. But what about Veruca? You know, what is her deal? She's just running around killing people in wolf form, giving in to her wolfy self. What do we think about that approach to werewolfism? And does that make it okay for Buffy to go after her with the intent to kill her, which is what it seemed like she did? Because she's like choosing the demon side of herself.
Well, Karen, as our local Teen Wolf aficionado, you can tell us, is this a plot on another Teen Wolf podcast's discussions? Like, are you always talking about, you know, should like Scott go unleashed or something? I don't know. Are there werewolves?
They have control right? of themselves when they're wolves?
It depends. Early on, they don't. But, I mean, in terms of Scott, no, we never think you should unleash, because Scott is perfect and he is doing exactly what he needs to be doing, which is being the true alpha. In terms of, like, Veruca's attitude toward her werewolf form, objectively, I actually really like it. I like that she owns this part of her, and I like that she is aware that the beast is always within her, even though it only comes out to play 3 times a month. That being said, I think her attitude toward life is unfortunate. I think that it mirrors Fate's a lot. Mm-hmm. Her attitude of being, you know, well, I have this power, I have this ability, I can do whatever I want. And that can be very dangerous, as we've seen before, and I think that's sort of where you have to draw the line. Yes, you should own your darkness, but don't make it an excuse for why you're doing terrible things.
Right. And this is another reason why I prefer Buffy's morality and setting up of its monsters versus its quote-unquote good guys to something like The Vampire Diaries, for example, where it's like, oh, I can just shut off my humanity and then whatever I do is like whatever, where you don't like the fact that you shut off your humanity and allowed yourself to become a monster that kills people makes you responsible for the people you killed when your humanity was shut off. Like, I don't care. That is the most it never made sense to me and I hate it. But this, I feel like it makes a lot of sense because we've got Buffy saying, I don't kill humans, and even going against that guy, I remember in season 2, who was, like, hunting werewolves for sport and being like, but they're human, like however many days out of the month. But here you got someone like Veruca, who is choosing to let herself run wild and choosing to allow her werewolf self to kill innocent people. We even know she's aware of herself when she's a werewolf, right? And Buffy is saying, okay, well, she's a demon. Like, I am the Slayer, and it's my responsibility to protect the innocent. And that makes Veruca my enemy, you know. But if Veruca chose to lock herself in a cage, she would have chosen the human side of herself like Oz did, and she wouldn't be a monster, you know. And I like that train of thinking about monsters versus non-monsters. So yeah, I think it's a very interesting, and I obviously, Veruca, the minute you choose to allow yourself to hurt and kill humans, then you are, it's not okay, you know. And then, of course, speaking of Oz and Veruca too, and a final point we have on the two of them is that they sensed each other before they ever even met, adding more to the whole idea of wolves, that maybe a little bit of pack mentality, which is something we haven't seen. Maybe when Oz goes and joins Teen Wolf, we'll see more of it. Who knows? And I also added a little question, which is something that you also addressed in the synopsis, which is, did they, like, quote-unquote, imprint on each other? Is that what we're to assume happened? Would this have happened if it had been a male werewolf? Dot, dot, dot.
Listen, disgusting. No, that's a lot of Twilight fan fiction up Zaz. In here. Do not get me started. Do not get me started on my Edward Jacob. I will.
But. I mean, they were so attached to each other. Are we to assume that this would happen with any werewolves that met in the wild, or is it just these two?
I think it's just these two. I think it's specifically mm-hmm. these two, because it makes more sense. Because the fact that there's a guy hunting a werewolf in Sunnydale gives me the impression that there might be another werewolf kind of like on the outskirts of town. Not quite exactly in town, because Oz hasn't sensed them. But mm-hmm. then that kind of kills my theory. I don't know. I feel like I just got the impression it was just for Veruca, though. It didn't feel like it was for any given werewolf. I mean, she was a really pretty she-wolf, and she was all done up as, like, a wolf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was well-groomed.
He, like, braid her hair, make it in, like, little ponytails or something really cute. She was, like, adorable and fuzzy and kind of like that beef jerky Sasquatch.
Yeah, okay.
I was just going to say that I find it interesting that they fought as much as they... Mm-hmm. you know, made out or whatever they actually ended up doing, which I think is interesting. I think that Oz would be able to sense another werewolf. Maybe he wouldn't be as pulled strongly to them as he was with Veruca, because I think it's clear that she did sort of hold something over on him, which is, you know, it is what it is. But that's a really good question, not something that I had thought of before, but now I really want to know how he would react to that.
Yeah, same. Because, like, one thing is being, quote-unquote, attracted and fighting with them. Another is what, like, Oz and Veruca did. I don't know if that sexual attraction is in their nature, or if it is some kind of like vague imprinting thing that they never really explored. That's totally how Stephanie Meyer got the idea. God, everyone. First Joe, now Stephanie Meyer. Ugh.
Well, remember when she's singing at the Bronze, and she also attracts Giles.
Yeah.
But she does it kind of like a siren, like she's singing to them, and they're like, even Giles is like, she has an amazing presence for someone of her age.
Oh,
and
Giles.
It's to me, I thought that she not only was a werewolf, but she had, yeah, like siren powers, that she was able to attract men specifically, perhaps, because it was just strange how everyone kind of dropped their jaw and looked at her in that way. Mm-hmm. And I think, and even the cinematography of it spoke to me that they were showing that the men were and the women were not interested in her, that the spell was working only on the men. And that could have just been a literal sexual attraction of Giles, mm-hmm. Xander, and Oz to Veruca when she was singing on stage. Or, I don't know, like, maybe that's a power of a she-wolf in this mythos that I don't know about yet.
There's a she-wolf in the glass. Yeah, you're right, definitely, sorry.
Why wasn't she singing Shakira? Missed moment, come on. Jump forward 10 years in time, Joss Whedon.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a good question. I don't have an answer. I don't know if the show gives us an answer to that, but that's a good theory. Yeah, we have the next question in the doc, which is something that I have been waiting to talk about for 2 years, or two seasons. It feels like 2 years. And,
really?
Which is, you ask, what would Willow's spell have accomplished, and should she have gone through with it? And I added a little note, which is, do you guys remember In season 2, Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered, when Xander tried to get that spell on Cordy after she broke up with him, and it was so wrong, and Xander was ruined forever, and he was horrible, and how dare he, and now we have Willow doing the same thing. Discuss.
Yeah, as badly as I felt for Willow, and as horrified as I was for her, when we flashed to her in the, like, science lab working on a spell, and, like, as she's, reciting the incantation, and you find out exactly what kind of spell she's casting, I got more and more uncomfortable. Like, mm-hmm. there's one, you know, like, with Xander's, I felt like he wasn't out for to do bad. Like, mm-hmm. He didn't have nefarious intent, whereas Willow was trying to, like, ruin Oz's life. Like, she was trying to make him feel the pain she was feeling. So, honestly, I think this was worse. But, you know, ultimately it didn't work. The spell didn't, you know, she didn't finish it or whatever. But, you know, it just, I was more shocked that she was actually at that point. Like, I really never really thought Willow would take it that far. And so, seeing her doing that spell, like, kind of took me aback. It was like, seriously? Like, we're here? I know you're hurt, but this badly? Like, wow.
That's interesting that I feel like, because with Xander, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say he didn't have malicious intent, but I think he maybe thinks smaller, or he had different priorities. Like, what he wanted to do was to make Cordy feel what he felt too. It was just on a smaller scale, because she had dumped him, and he was like, okay, well, I'm going to make her feel for me what I feel for her, and then I'm gonna dump her, and then she can see what that's like, haha. You know, which is a horrible thing, but it's like an eye for an eye kind of thing, you know. That's what he was after, and he was like, well, I'm gonna use witchcraft to do it, which is terrible. But, you know, here we have Willow essentially trying to take away his happiness forever. You know, I would say that's equally bad. It's just on a higher level, and it's a bigger threat too, because we know that Willow is actually capable of doing it, you know.
Exactly.
Like, the other was very much a high school thing. This is like serious business.
Yeah, and we know that she's been practicing, and that she's, you know, this is a legitimate threat here, whereas I don't necessarily know if Xander quite, you know, mm-hmm. thought it would actually work.
Right, exactly. Either way, we have yet another person here trying to sort of take out their hurt and anger and frustration with magic, which is an interesting thing. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, what's his face? Spike did it, tried to do it too.
To Drew?
Interesting. Yeah, to Drew, yeah.
What was he doing? Because he wanted Willow to do it, and that's why he was holding her hostage.
He
did it
when he wanted to do the love spell, yeah.
And that's where, yeah, they had the whole fight with the gang of vampires in that one shop.
Yeah, that was the one. Actually, Karen, didn't Spike want to do it for the same reason Xander did? Like, he wanted to make her love him, and then he wanted to dump her, or did he just want to make her love him? I don't remember.
I want to say just make her love him, because he's...
He wouldn't want to live without her. Yeah,
yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, but yeah, no, I mean, it is definitely an interesting thing that sort of recurs on the show, at least up until this point. And what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on this, Karen?
Oh man, I have to just basically agree with Kristen, because I think Willow's, like, what she's doing is terrible. I understand her pain and where she's coming from, but this idea of using magic to get back at somebody is really quite scary. And I think I agree with you too in that Xander just kind of thinks on a much smaller scale, and what Willow was doing was terrifying. I mean, she has the ability to really destroy somebody's life, and the fact that she wanted to do that to Oz just shows how hurt she was. And while I understand that, I just kept going, don't do it, don't do it. And when she looks at the picture of Oz, and she kind of like gets her senses and realizes that, you know, she loves him so much that she can't hurt him, it was a relief to to say mm-hmm. the least.
I agree. And Mitch, do you stand by your season two stance that if any other character did what Sander did, you would never forgive them?
Trump card. Wow. Way to pull the rug from my feet. Look waiting. At you, Selena.
We it feels have like been I'm waiting.
It feels like I'm in the presidential so elections right now, and you were just like, so Hillary.
But
okay, you caught me. No. No, I don't. No. And I don't even hate Xander okay. anymore, so.
Yay!
I'm totally like outside of that.
Okay,
thinking.
It's all good.
I was so angry. I was so angry yes. from that point. And, remember. But then again, I don't think she was trying to do the same spell as Xander mm-hmm. there. But no, to that point, I really don't hate Xander anymore. I think I just lost it, and I lost my fire. I was so furious at him back in the day. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's like after Beer Bad when he's kind of like the dad to everyone. But I was just like, okay, you actually did grow up, and you kind of redeemed
he's
yourself.
He's grown, hasn't he? Like,
he
yeah,
has.
They
he
all
needed,
change.
He needed a
and
lot
grow.
Of time to get there. I'll give you that much. I hated yeah. him with a burning passion before. Mm-hmm. No, I'm over my
but
Xander.
That's okay, too. I mean, I think that's also, again, we're talking about this, obviously, from two different points of view, the newbies and the ones who've seen it all. And I think it's so interesting to get that first time perspective, but also just to know that these characters all go through a lot and all, and I feel like, again, you know, the growth of the characters in Buffy is very, very organic, and it takes a long time. And you see someone like Xander having matured to a place where I don't think he would ever do that spell, which he tried to do in high school. On the other hand, someone like Willow probably wouldn't have tried to do that spell in high school. So
you know what? She,
everyone
if
changes.
She had, if she had asked, actually rescued Rat Amy, which she, I mean, who knows the shelf
oh
life of like a store rat? That thing could be dead by now, right?
Yeah, well, it's magic.
She probably would have gone through with it. She probably would have used Amy to help her. Or if Anya was sticking around. Or maybe that mm-hmm. one random emo kid that was part of her witchcraft.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever happened to him, you know?
I don't remember his name.
Well, it's funny, too, because you think she'd find like a witch friend by now, because or a warlock friend, because she just went to this group.
Oh yeah,
night.
She did. She had her first that. Wicca meeting.
Yeah, so I assume that we're to see more now that she has no Oz. She's probably going to find a love interest there, because it's probably why they were doing that in terms of television writing. It seems like it would make sense. Maybe that's why they had bring Oz out, so they can bring another character in. I don't know. So I don't know of any other cast members that are like famous to come in. Like, we always knew that Seth Green was in the show. And, you know, like James Marsters, like we knew those characters were coming because the show was popular enough that we knew about the actors. I don't know of another character being introduced, so I'd be genuinely interested if Willow was to meet a love interest in the Wicca group.
Well, there's Riley.
Oh, you know, she was kind of interested in the TA too, wasn't like, she? Because the TA was the one character. That she dropped the book on the head of, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, speaking on that point, though, I mean, where slash when will we see Oz again? Is this his way out of the show? Is he coming back? Is he going to be an angel, like you said? Did he? I don't think a spinoff for him was planned. I think they talked about it, but I don't think there was ever. It wasn't like a Jess situation, Gilmore Girls. I just watched that episode, so now I know what I'm talking about. you know, there wasn't like a spinoff plan that failed for him, if that helps.
Listen, Windward Circle would be the best ever.
I liked him in his little visit on Angel. Like, that was quite fun. So I'd be fine if he were to end up in L.A. trying to find himself. But I can't imagine that would be a much better place for a wolf to try to find himself. so I'm imagining... Oh, yeah. I'm imagining that Oz is probably going to be MIA for a little while, but, you know, I really hope he comes back. I want to see more of him, and they can't leave this completely unresolved for the rest of the series. That would be evil. So, you know, I'm going to hope and pray that Oz finds his way back to Sunnydale and to Willow.
Yeah. In that last moment when he was in the car, did you guys think he was going to turn and come back?
Oh, yeah. Like, the look on his face and the camera shooting back to Allison Hannigan crying with, like, that heart-crushing look on her face when you look at her and you just feel so much for her. I was like, they can't just end the show on this. They're going to give her Oz back. This isn't going to happen. She's going to keep him. And then when she didn't have him, I was like, he really just left. Like, that van has seen so many emotional moments. And it's like a bigger deal than the Mystery Machine. This is the Scooby van that it's been through battles, and it's about to see more in the Oz spinoff that I'm sure is never going to happen. I wonder really, though, if there was, like, an idea for, like, guys, should we do a pilot?
And then they should call it The Wizard of Oz.
The Wizard of Oz?
Oh, my God.
Maybe he meets a wizard. The and Witch he becomes best friends. Kind of like Merlin, the TV show. Oz. Yeah, that'd be fun.
Oh, adorable. But I guess, you know, we're kind of left just with a couple of last questions here, and then we should go into our favorite scenes where there will be much more reminiscing about Willow crying because, oh my God. So Buffy finally gets a win in school. And she had like a moment when the teacher was Professor Walsh was like, oh, well, you should lead a discussion group in her very, you know, performative voice that I really like because it's so different.
You sound like her actually when you're using that. That's cool.
Right. That is how she speaks. I like it. I love it. Yeah. I don't know why.
Very fancy.
She's doing theater and everyone else is doing TV. It's amazing. So she's like asked to present in front of the whole class and she gets a better grade than Willow. And it's a really nice moment. I really enjoy this. As you say, you go, girl.
Yeah. This moment is so good for so many different reasons because I'm glad that, you know, they're showing that Buffy's not an idiot. I mean, she says some things sometimes where it's like, you know, her head's just up in the clouds, but she's not stupid. Mm-hmm. We've seen before test grades and, like, pragmatically that she is quite intelligent and she's a good tactician and it helps her become a better slayer because of that. But also, even though, and she's excited that she does well. I think that's really important too, that she's like, yeah, you know, I can do this. She doesn't immediately go, oh no, I'm too stupid. I can't get up in front of the class and, you know, tell them about whatever she's talking about. But other than that, it's Willow's support. Like, yeah, she's jealous, but she's really excited for Buffy and to see them not going head to head over this and it not, you know, causing a little, secondary plot of mm-hmm. like a rift between them was really nice as well.
Yeah, go Bechdel test as well. Very good. Yes.
And it's nice to see that they're both growing. Like Buffy was not the best student in high school, not dumb, but not the best student, and she's clearly putting a lot more effort in, whereas Willow was like the perfect student, but you know, her extracurriculars and other things, like, she didn't necessarily always, you know, get into everything. So Willow has taken on her magic and all of that, while Buffy has become, like, a better student. It's nice to see both ladies, like, doing better and doing other things.
Yeah. And we also have a question, obviously, at the top of the episode. You know, it was kind of like a fake out because we had Buffy slaying a vamp and being punny as always. And Spike is like, I'm back. You know, the big bad is back to ruin your life. Except he's not because he was tased and dragged away, which is hilarious.
I actually, like, swooned a little bit at the beginning of the episode. I was like, oh, I don't remember him being in this episode. And then I realized why.
And the picture quality was so good.
Yeah, it's nice seeing James Marsters in HD, isn't it?
I know. It was about time. So he was back. First of all, were you surprised to see him back so soon? And were you surprised to see him dragged off so soon? And what do you think is going on?
It was like the same group that's taking away other vampires, right? Because we saw them do that
maybe
in the episode with Sunday. Remember her? Mm-hmm. She had one of her lackeys run away, and he was stolen as well. And I don't know if we're meant to recognize him when we eventually see him again, or if he'll already be, like, melted into some kind of superpower goo or something. But I wonder if that's what they're doing. Maybe they're making, like, vampire soup, and it's, like, super acidic or can, like, destroy the world or something.
I have to say, Mitch, you always go for the gold with your theories.
I know, I like it.
I'm kind of thinking like Who Framed Roger Rabbit? You know how they melt the cartoons. Oh. That's what I'm feeling here.
I hate that scene.
Oh, don't, the shoe! The shoe! Come on! Most traumatic scene of my childhood of any movie.
Traumatized. I was glad that they threw that little Spike scene in because, like, it's good to know where he is. Like, since he was on Buffy and then Angel and then Buffy, you know, like, it's nice to know that we're supposed to think he's in Sunnydale. Well, you know, now he's been taken, but, you know, at least we know where he is. He's not hanging around LA trying to get back at Angel again. So
that was nice. Yeah, I agree. And I think that's everything we have for this episode. So if we want to jump to our favorite scenes, Mitch, why don't you go first since we were just talking about it?
Yeah, mine's just Spike's anticlimactic capture. You expect there to be so much more, and he's like going to be the nemesis of this episode, and then he's just gone. Bye.
I know. So awesome.
Mine was Buffy getting her good grade at the beginning of the episode. It was just really cute with between her and her professor, and her like being proud of herself, and then Willow, you know, sharing in that pride and being like, "I hate you," and then but I love you, you know, but I'm proud of you. So it was nice to see the girls have a moment before all of the heartbreak and sadness.
Yeah, and mine was I had to just because I mean, you know. I like him. So the first one was Giles joining the gang at the Bronze because it was hilarious. And I like this continuation of Giles just having no idea what he's going to do with his life. And I also really enjoyed the scene with Willow and Xander in the basement just because I feel like it's been a while since we've had an episode with the two of them like that. And I really, you know, I've said before, I'm a huge fan of the Willow and Xander friendship as it progresses through the show and how close they are and how much they love each other. And this was just another example of how far these two characters have come. And once again, like you said, Mitch, we get to see Xander in this like advice giving capacity, a role that I really, really enjoy seeing him in. It's so fun that he's like the one who's out of college and is quote unquote the failure, yet in a lot of ways he has things figured out in a way that the others don't, which I enjoy.
Xander like took over the role from Giles of the hot dad in this show, and I'm kind of loving it.
Interesting. That's a turn. I don't think he took over from Giles. I mean, let's be real. It's Giles.
Like ever since like the Halloween episode, or even the girl he had over, and he was so cash about it, and he's like, "What do you want, Buffy?" Like I feel like Giles turns from like yeah, like the hot dad that like has sexy potential to just like straight up is sexy.
But oh my
now
god,
Xander
yes.
is like stepping into that Giles role. Like he's even hanging out with him a whole bunch.
That's true. The
he's
sexiness
like,
is rubbing
apprentice,
off on him.
Apprentice, because they're both like, well, the writers didn't give us anything important to do, so why don't we just serve
I'm beer sure that's what
people
they're thinking.
Into Neanderthals? That'll be fun.
I really enjoy that. I think it speaks to like the both of them want to be part of the group, but they don't have a place. You know, so they flock together because they don't know what else to do. I think that makes a lot of sense.
One might say they're shippable.
You might.
One might
gander?
Say they're gander.
You might yeah. have a gander at it.
You might yeah. have a gander at my gander.
Karen, help.
Get us out of the ships. Get us out of the ships.
It's kind of funny. My favorite parts of this episode are basically when Willow is crying, and that makes me sound like a terrible person, but it's because she's such a good crier. She is, and like, she's an ugly crier, so it's great because it's like, that feels so real, and it does. It just breaks your heart when you see her like that, and especially Willow, who is kind of, you know, always optimistic and peppy, and she's just completely heartbroken, and you just want to reach out and hug her, but you can't.
It's one of the reasons, you know, watching her on How I Met Your Mother, like, and it's not that she's bad on How I Met Your Mother, but she's so good on Buffy. Like, she's so good at this stuff, and I kind of feel like it's such a shame they don't use it very much on How I Met Your Mother, but like when they do, obviously they do it really well, but I know her from this first, so I was always just really sad because this is so good.
She has
such emotional range.
She has a quality about her too that's so unique. I think that yeah. casting her as Willow was like seriously like hitting gold, mm-hmm. because I don't think they ever would have expected this little girl in overalls would turn out to be such an advanced actress.
She's the best of all of them, you know, like I'm not saying the others are bad, but she's just so good.
Well, followed by
and
Seth
I really
Green.
Wish she'd had more of these roles. Well, yeah, he's good too,
because I know he's kind of like, it's kind of like where David is as Angel doesn't really have a lot of material to work with because he's very stoic, but when he breaks mm-hmm. down, you see that he yeah. actually had these layers underneath him, and especially when we kind of like hear in his head, you know, what Oz mm-hmm. is really thinking all that time, it makes more sense.
Yeah, exactly.
Not to say that Sarah's not doing a good job too, because Sarah.
No, and that feels so bad because she is amazing and they're all amazing. Anthony Head is fantastic, but
they give, you know, Sarah campier stuff. Like I think, yeah. I think Allison gets more of the heavier, meatier emotional scenes because there's she gets them every once in a while. Like in their when she has them, they're crushing like this. But Sarah has them like almost every waking minute of Buffy's life. So it's like it's,
so she shines when she gets to be funny because she doesn't get to do that as
often. Just like your quote. Ooh, transition.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I will go into my quote because it makes sense. So mine was from the beginning of the episode when Buffy's staking a vamp. She says, "You know very well you eat this late." She stakes him. "You're gonna get heartburn." Burn. Get it? Heartburn. And then he turns to dust. And then she goes, "That's it. That's all I get. One lame-ass vamp with no appreciation for my painstakingly thought-out puns. I don't think the forces of darkness are even trying." I love this. I love that she makes this pun, and I love that she has thought about it for a long time.
Does she sit in her room and she just like...
I think she does.
I wonder if Spider-Man does that too. Like, her and Spider-Man get together.
I think she has a book.
Yeah. Like, they could share puns. Maybe she reads the Spider-Man comics. Maybe that's that.
Maybe she is. Yeah, she is kind of like Spider-Man. You're right.
I mean, if I was the Slayer, I would spend time coming up with important punnage because it's too much fun. And I really loved that scene.
And it's so good. Like, it's in Buffy's DNA. And I know a lot of people, when they start watching it, they're like, "Oh, my God, the staking puns are so lame." So I like that this, like, goes full out and then, like, kind of says, yeah, Buffy thinks about these puns a lot. That's just what she's like, you know, and it adds like dimension to
the beginning of the show. I remember when like I was like, "Natalie, please tell me this changes." She goes, "No, Mitch, that's your character." And I was like, "Shut up, no, this can't be shut up." But now I'm into it. It's cute.
Yeah, because it is her character. And she's so much more, but she's also this stupid bad pun, you know, Slayer girl, and I like it.
Maybe I just like Buffy more in general, the show and the character. Because it's still just as lame.
Yeah, and yet not. So, Willow. No, that's not you. Kristen. I'm sorry.
I mean, you can call me Willow. I'm not going to take offense. No, mine came from Willow, and it was after Buffy, like, showed her her grade. She goes, "You made me jealous of you, academically." And it's so
good Willow
cute,
voice.
And it's so Willow, and it just made me really happy. And I, again, loved that scene a lot, so it stands out. But just good fun.
Yeah, and another funny line that is not stupid. Mitch?
Yeah, I don't know what this thing is, but maybe someone else can explain it to me. Giles has Buffy over, and he goes, "Can I get you anything? Tea? I made a very interesting muska last night."
Moussaka.
Moussaka.
Pass on the tea. And the moose? No, thank you.
Well, see, this is continues Buffy's trend of not being able to pronounce hard words. I love it.
So what is a recurring joke?
It's like it's like a dish. Like it's like a Greek dish, right?
Mm-hmm. It's very delicious.
Such a housewife. I love it.
Yes, he is. Cooking it's kind of like Giles. Lasagna, but not.
Yeah, a bit.
But you're always disappointed. It's the thing you get and you think it's lasagna, and then you take a bite out of it and you're like, "Oh, this is not lasagna."
Like eggplant. At least that's how I feel. Like you think it's going to be like really cheesy and delicious, and it's too much vegetable.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of like Buffy. Sorry. So there you go. Oh my God. And Karen, why don't you round us off with something sad?
Again, this is my trend for this episode. My favorite line is when Willow asks, "Don't you love me?" And then Oz says, "My whole life, I've never loved anything else." And then he leaves anyway, and it's like, kick her while she's down. But it's such a beautiful line, and I'm so glad that they had him say this, because it shows that he's not a bad guy, that what he did wasn't on purpose, wasn't because he doesn't care for her, and he's not leaving because, you know, he doesn't have feelings for her anymore. He's leaving because he thinks that this is the best thing for both of them, and that just makes it even harder to watch.
Yeah. God, this is so heartbreaking, you guys. Oh, I don't want him to leave. Okay.
No. Oh, Angel, anyway. So we can laugh.
Yes, let's go to Angel. that was Wild at Heart for you. Very, very sad. Now, Angel is Sense and Sensitivity, a Jane Austen pun. You can't go wrong with that. Or can you? Let's discuss. So, in this episode, Kate and Angel become emotional human flops who are both excellent at from-the-hip hit headshots and tears. When Kate and Angel put away head mafia leader named Little Tony, a sensitivity training voodoo man is sent after them to make them feel. And apparently this will somehow lead to Little Tony's escape? Anywho, it doesn't work, but Wolfram and Hart are now targeting our Angel, so that can't be good. Okay. We're an Angel now. I think this is only like the second Angel episode I've talked about, so this should be interesting. So I just wanted to note, I wrote in here at the top of the doc that this is actually the first episode of Angel that was written by Tim Minear, who would go on to become a key writer and producer of Angel. So he went on to influence a lot of what happened in the rest of the show. It wasn't the first episode that he wrote, but it was the first that aired because there were some like scheduling issues in season one, and he actually went on to both Firefly and Dollhouse, and his Twitter handle is canceled again because his shows always get canceled, which I think is hilarious and sad. But yeah, so I mean, yeah, I know, right? He's like, he I think he thinks of himself as like a curse on TV shows, which is a shame because, you know, he's really good. But so I mean, this episode, yeah, it's basically like that. Give everyone, it's kind of like a truth spell episode in a way, and I don't know what you guys thought. What did you guys think of like a Kate-centric episode, such as it almost was?
It's cool.
Newbies?
Yeah. No, it's fine.
How are you feeling about Kate?
I find the actress to be very compelling, very, very compelling, and I find her to do a good job at chewing scenery in a way that's not obnoxious on a procedural like this, because she finds a way to make the show feel a bit more mature and fleshed out when at times it's not. And I'm thinking of scenes like before she goes to give the speech, the way she's handling her champagne glass and her reactions to seeing her father and introducing Angel. All of those moments were interesting to me because you can see her actually thinking as an actress, little beats, little moments of how she's reacting to the crowd around her and to Angel being next to her. And she's actively thinking. She's always on as an actress. So I love seeing her, but her character I find to be a bit dull. Because it turns out she is very emotionally turned off, as we learn in this episode. And that really doesn't lead to too much interesting conversation between her and Angel, because they're really just going to, you know, say quick, short things to each other, and they're not really going to get in depth. Unless, I mean, because like when Angel was with Buffy, he kind of got into it. So maybe this is like, you know, his Buffy part two. Maybe this is really going to be Angel, the ship that takes over Angel, and this is our thing now, and get used to it. I'm not sure, because it's very hard to get attached to a ship with two very emotionally detached characters like this.
Yeah, they're very similar, aren't they? Mm-hmm. Like, and also, Kate is oddly similar to Buffy, but without being funny. You know, it's almost like, because we had that whole scene of her running down the alley and being a cop, and even kind of like sassing the guy, and it was just like, this is the police slayer, you know?
The way that they shot her, the way that she was framed with the lighting and the running and all the, I mean, it was Buffy, like, with her hair pulled back and everything, it even looked like her. I was shocked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or even the interrogation scene, like, the way she's just like, you're here to give me the answers, you know? Where are they?
Mm-hmm. She is the Slayer cop.
There you go. And like, and you know, it's funny because I like, what I do like is that, and this is one of the things I think shows in this time period did so well that for some reason media is finding really hard to do now. But the fact that Kate is clearly the most brutal and hard-edged and out of touch with like emotions out of everyone in her office. Like, she's the only woman, but she's also the most like traditionally masculine. You can't see my air quotes, but they're very much here. And it's not made a big deal. Like, it's not about her being a woman. It's not about like, oh my God, she's a woman and she acts like a man. Like, that's never an issue. I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think the thing for me, which is kind of like similar to what you were saying, Mitch, for me, Kate just kind of blends into the wallpaper on the show, and she always has. And I'm very curious to hear what, I know Emmy Foss, one of our listeners, loves her, and be very interested to hear what the listeners in general feel about her, because I always found myself like feeling bad that I don't really have much of an impression of Kate. I mean, even in this episode, which is supposed to be about her, I'm just like,
That's kind of the issue with Buffyverse in general, that there are characters cast as B-roles that stop mattering because they're just love interests, and they look and they act like other characters we've seen on the show before. So I'm thinking kind of like Riley, for instance, on Buffy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like B-roll love interest.
Yeah, Kate is definitely the Riley of Angel.
She is. And it's not that she's not, like, maybe if we didn't have so many blondes, she'd stand out a bit more, because blonde usually would stand out on a TV show, I would think, right? Maybe not anymore, though, because Buffy and Angel have really done it in over just casting blonde woman to, like, foil Buffy, and it's pretty obnoxious.
Yeah.
And it's sad that she was, I mean, I feel like they should have pulled an Ariana Grande and just dyed her hair, like, that obnoxious red like they did in Victorious to make us really remember her. Because it's not the actress's fault. She's really memorable herself. She looks like Buffy, and it sucks. Mm-hmm. It sucks so much, because I wish they cast someone or made her look different or something. It's almost painful to watch the show not... It feels like it doesn't even realize the problem it's creating in not giving us diversity in at least hair colors. Come on, like...
Well, I think Angel has a type. To be fair, like, I think they're making it very clear that Angel is staying true, like that girl in the first episode. But I do think it does create this weird sense of, like, they all look the same so far.
Just on TV, people can look the same if they have similar attributes. That's just part of what it's like as a viewer. That's not like a bad thing that we think.
But then I also thought that alike. Parker looked like Xander, so it's like a general problem.
They do. No, yeah, he looked like Xander, as does Riley look like Xander, and a lot of other love interests for Buffy have looked like Xander.
So I guess, you know, we'll get back to talking about Kate later on, I'm sure. But before we actually get to her, there was a slime monster, which Cordelia's sassy handling of it all was great, as Doyle was getting choked out in the background. This was a very funny scene.
Yeah, that was cute. Was it like a Hydra monster? Because they're like, you have to cut off all the heads.
Yes, it was Hydra.
Yeah.
Angel is like, hey, Hydra.
Hey, Hydra, please.
and you said Angel had a Baltimorean accent. Not really, but his outfit was cool. Oh my God. This is like, this comes up again in favorite scenes. I know, because I wanted it and someone else had already taken it. But yeah, Angel dresses up like... like in a Hawaiian
tourist.
I forgot that this happened, because this episode in general, I'm not a huge fan of this episode, I have to say, but that's, I forgot so the scene was in this episode, and I was like, yeah. This is probably when I fell in love with Angel.
Did anyone else think he was Irish at first again?
Yeah, well, maybe like from a character point of view, his Irish just kind of slips back in every once in a while, because I notice it does that when he's talking to Doyle. And I actually think that's very elegantly done, you know?
It could be like, the character Angel doesn't know how to do another accent, but Irish. Yeah, but we could also say that's David not knowing how to do any other accent.
It could go either way.
Do Irish well, so it's like, come on.
Yeah.
Maybe just get this guy a voice coach. Because it was painful.
Mm-hmm. And you said who else was bored to tears at this little Tony intro? I guess this kind of comes back to it being about Kate and setting up Kate's character, which again, I really appreciate the understated hardness of her. But yeah, I was kind of bored.
It was like 10 minutes of just chasing after this random guy we don't know in the alleyway. The only connection we have is Kate, and there are a bunch of other random characters that they're trying to introduce in her task force that we don't care about, and it's just really like watching a pilot all over again, but a pilot of a really weird middle plot of a season. So it's just strange, and it's, I don't know, I wish they introduced Kate properly in this episode in a better way. If this is going to be Kate's episode, give her more meat. I think maybe they should have started with like her father. Maybe if they came into it with more of an emotional punch, I would have been more interested. Or just taken out like the 5 minutes of chase scene we had in the beginning. That was just extensive and pointless in the end of the day. Unless it showed she's like Buffy, look, she's running through the alleyways.
Yeah.
That character mattered nothing in the end of the day. The one she caught, he really didn't make a difference.
Well, I think the thing that did matter is that, first of all, he obviously was the one who enacted that guy to do that voodoo thing. But I also think it showed, like, when we go back to him at the end, he really was like a tiny fish in a much larger net, you know, which I think was supposed to. I'm not saying it necessarily worked very well, but I think that's what it was supposed to.
10 minutes of screen time. Because that was out of this world. I don't know. Were Karen and Kristen, did you guys find yourself really bored at the beginning of this episode?
I think the episode picks up much better later on, so I do think it has a slow start.
Yeah.
But I actually really love this episode. Kristen and I were talking a little bit about this, and that this episode is so funny. You get so many great lines and so many great moments because of this whole, like, voodoo doctor thing. But at the same time, the episode's really kind of dark and damaged. You see this side to Angel, but especially to Kate, where, you know, things in her life haven't been the greatest, and the whole thing with her mom and her dad is just devastating, and the fact that they can weave both the comedy and the seriousness of, you know, this plot together in one episode, I think is commendable.
Yeah, I think for me what it is, and this comes back to something I talked about like a month ago, when I was, you know, how I feel like Buffy episodes to me go by a lot quicker because it's all about the central characters. Whereas here, I feel like it's like we were saying, it's more procedural in that there's a lot of time spent built up characters that ultimately mean nothing. Like Mitch was saying, we didn't need 10 minutes with little Tony because, spoiler alert, we're never going to see little Tony again. At least I don't remember if we do. So I think that's sort of, that was, again, with this episode, something that I didn't, because I agree with you, Karen, like all the stuff, the funny stuff, especially Angel, like when he gets to be funny, I'm here for it all day. And I'm happy that this episode allowed him a chance to do that. But I think everything with little Tony, everything with Kate, everything with the cops, like I was like, I don't need this. It's not what I'm here for. It's not, I'm here for the main characters, which is why a show like Buffy maybe is more my speed. Because there's never a moment when I feel like I can look away from the screen because I feel like I need to watch everything that happens because every little exchange is important. And everything you miss, like you really miss, because when something comes back 3 episodes later, you're going to be like, oh, that was so random. Whereas if you'd paid attention, it wouldn't have been so random. Here, it's like a lot more is random.
You know, maybe it would have functioned better if this episode treated itself like Julie Plec writes The Vampire Diaries. She's very good, I think, at focusing on 2 different timelines, or maybe even 3 in an episode, where we have characters doing one thing and then doing another. Because Kate doesn't feel like she's fleshed out enough at all to deserve an entire episode where, as I was saying, it feels like the middle of the season episode where Kate has already been developed when she really hasn't. So maybe it would have been better.
Well, do you think she's more fleshed out now?
I mean, she is now, but it started off, like I'm saying, those 10 minutes felt like a middle of the season episode for her, as opposed to essentially Kate's pilot in the end of the day, because it gave her more, you know, room to grow emotionally in this episode, and that was great. I liked that. I really did. But maybe if we had something going on with, let's just say, Cordelia and Doyle, give them a rascally adventure, even if it's just a B-plot, maybe it's all of them dealing with the Hydra, and then they come to realize they love each other, or something crazy, and he has more visions, and it's building up Wolfram and Hart more, it comes back together into this Angel-Kate plot, that would have been kind of cool.
I was going to say, I don't necessarily think it's fair to say that Kate is undeveloped. I remember in, I think it's the pilot, or the second episode, one of the two, where you first meet her, like, I really was interested in her. She, you know, she's the one sitting at the bar all sad, and like, yes, it's been a while since we had an episode from Kate, but I think that's more or less the disservice that the show has done her, is that it's been so long since we had real interaction between her and Angel that when he shows up in the police station and is talking to her again, you're like, oh yeah, that's right, these two, okay. Mm-hmm. And it takes a minute to get back into it. So I don't think it's that she's not developed or that she can't get there, because I think this episode did a lot for her character and I really do like her. I just think that they need to be a little more consistent with how she's worked into the story. Like, if she's okay. if she's meant yeah, to agree. Be if she's meant to be some sort of main love interest or anything for Angel, she needs to be in more episodes. Like, if she's gone for 3 or 4 in a row, then you're not going to have the emotional attachment that you should.
I agree with this 1,000,000%.
Oh, seriously, Kristen, nail on the head. That was amazing.
Yes, and this is yep, you are right. And maybe if they hadn't spent a whole episode on that stupid guy with the detachable hands, then we would have
had it,
and they would all have been good.
Miss that lady wasn't blonde. At least she wasn't blonde, okay? We're making some progress here.
That's true. I mean, moving on a little bit, the monster of the week of this episode was feelings and repressed childhood memories, which obviously brought the conflict with Kate and her father to a head, but it also, again, allowed Angel to get in touch with his, you know, Care Bear side. It was different. It was different. Yeah, his puppy's eye, there you go. And it was different from anything that we've seen on the show so far, although I will say there has been a lot more sort of emotional manipulation on Angel than I think there ever was in Buffy. Like, the monsters often influence people to do things like this. Often, I say we're 6 episodes in, but it seems like a thing. So what did you guys think about this, about the concept of this episode?
I mean, giving us an opportunity to see Angel, like, express inner turmoil.
Express himself.
Verbally? Oh, my God. I'll take it any day, because it was hysterical to, like, hear him talk. Like, you know, I don't know if this is anybody's favorite line. I really, really hope not. Maybe it's mine. The stuff with, like, him and Cordy and Doyle outside, where he's talking about, like, I can't go full vamp, and, like, you know, like, you're kind of getting a taste of what it's like to be an Angel's head without being an Angel's head, and it's fun. Like, it's kind of nice to see that, especially since you know it's going to wear off. It's not permanent, but he has to kind of endure it, and yeah, so I enjoyed that aspect of this episode a lot.
Mm-hmm. You have a question here too, saying, I don't understand how making the task force feelsy will lead to little Tony's escape. That one guy letting them out was a strange fluke. I don't know. I think he wanted them to destroy themselves.
But it's not a very reliable thing if you're relying on human emotion. That's like the most wild, rampant thing to say, that's going to help me escape it. I don't know, like, whatever happened to, like, send me a nail file in the cake and I'll do it at night. Like, like, they have so many more options here. They really
do. Well, I think he wanted chaos, you know? I think he wanted to make a fool out of these people. He wanted to destroy the precinct,
basically. Some men just want to watch the world burn.
Exactly. And maybe he had, like, a backup plan. Like, someone was ready to come lock him out when they'd all sort of, like, hugged each other to death.
That's
exactly what I was going to say, because if you don't think that Wolfram and Hart had a backup plan, you haven't been paying attention.
Yeah, because this felt like that. This definitely didn't feel like the best plan to get him out, because I was like, that one guy could have just, I don't know, like, what if Angel ran in time and stopped the guy from letting them out or something, I don't know.
Well, and like the guy from Wolfram and Hart said, like, you were meant to kill her in the midst of the chaos so that no one would have noticed. Like, they were trying to make it possible for him to kill her and it not be noticed.
But how
Whereas
convoluted.
Instead he shot up an entire precinct and got himself in big trouble.
Because he's a bit of a Voldemort character, because he has the pride in killing Harry, you know, like, no one else touches him, I kill him in the graveyard. He's gonna escape, you idiot. It's it just seems silly, like, maybe kill her, like, I don't know, via hitman or something, and feel satisfied that that still happened, but he has this pride that he's like, I have to be the one that does it, I can't let some lady cop do this to me. Which, Selena, you were saying that you haven't referenced her being a woman. I think that that was meant to be a jab at her being a woman, but it also comes back to bite him in the ass when, once again, she straight up, like, from the hip, headshot someone in the middle of crying, and I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
You do not mess with Kate. Like, she almost has supernatural power, and she's almost like Deadshot from Suicide Squad, okay?
She's almost too perfect.
Oh, are you trying to make me feel like she's a soup? Is she a soup?
A Mary soup? Maybe.
A Mary soup? What? No, she starts to feel more like a supernatural in this episode because she just like.
No, I'm just saying she's like a slayer without being a slayer. You know,
she is.
Like, yeah, oh, I'm so good.
The way
at
she
everything.
Runs after people so fast, and yeah. She's like able to.
I know. How does she run so fast?
Overcome everyone.
No. Anyway, did you guys suspect the sensitivity trainer guy to be a supernatural? A soup.
I mean, not necessarily at first, because he was spouting all the right lines, but as soon as we, like, got the cutaway and he was in a different office, I was like, he's at Wolfram and Hart, and it's like, yep, there he is, yeah. So, it wasn't surprising, but I didn't necessarily think so at first.
And we also have a question, are we meant to ship Kangel now? I feel like you can do better than that, Mitch.
Or we could just call them Kate and Angel.
That takes too long. We're on a clock here, Karen.
I don't know. Like, Angel's tough because you have to make his name the last one because he doesn't really have something that can meld well with another name, like if he's the first part of it.
So okay. He'd be, so 8 is out of the question.
Like, 8 would be just kind of, it sounds weird. I try and avoid words that are already words because then you tend to like forget
then we
them.
Could say, do you sense 8?
Do you sense 8?
Oh, my God. I'm sorry.
You're too funny this episode. Who
I'm
are
hungry.
You, Buffy?
I know. So, yeah, but no, I mean, do you guys think, are we meant to ship these two, Kate and Angel, this episode? Are they being set up to be romantic?
I think it's just, we're meant to see that they have a lot, like, in common. Like, they both have had, you know, complicated pasts and you know, her dad and seeing the treatment of her dad and how all that affects her, like, they kind of are kindred spirits a little bit, and I think that's more or less what we're supposed to get. I don't know if they're meant to be some, you know, brilliant pairing or anything, but I definitely think they have a connection for sure.
Mm-hmm. They're like they're, but like we said before, they're so similar characters.
Definitely, yeah.
You can't see. It's almost weird, like when they move to hug each other. They were like, you, no, you. Like,
come
I was
here.
Cringing so hard. I was like, no.
See, it's I kind like of found that sweet because I was like, oh my God, Angel's actually feeling. This is great.
That's true. But it's just like, I don't know. I don't know if you guys agree with this. This is always just a personal thing. I don't really think they have chemistry. So
I
was like, oh, no.
No, I totally do.
But that's good.
It's like a dry chemistry, but it's still a chemistry. It's like, it's kind of like that chemistry where you feel like they're really, really calm in their exterior, but in the interior, they're just like, oh my God, I want to rip off his clothes right now.
Okay.
I feel like they have good friendship chemistry, not necessarily romantic chemistry.
You don't think they're sexy together?
I really want them to be friends. Like, I really want them to confide in each other.
Yeah, guys. Why can't guys and girls ever just be friends?
I mean, Angel can't have nice things anyway, so she's going to die.
Well, there you go. So how does Kate not know that Angel is a soup? Oh my God, soup. is a vampire by now. Shouldn't this be conveyed to her ASAP? I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, she hasn't been around enough to see him slipping in and out of the sunlight and diving into the sewers to escape. You know, I think at some point she's going to figure it out, or, you know, something's going to happen that will give it away, but we'll get there. Mm-hmm. I think we'll get there.
What I find
we're
funny
only six
is,
episodes in.
we know that she searched his place and she didn't apparently find the fridge full of blood. I don't know.
Was, I'm still weirded out on that point.
He was fresh out. It was empty.
Okay. There you go.
He didn't go to the meat locker
yet. You fixed
it. So, yeah, it's strange because it's starting to feel kind of like a Disney Channel sitcom, That's So Raven, Hannah Montana, like, who's going to find out that under that wig she's just an ordinary girl? It starts to feel like who's going to be part of Angel's Scooby group now, and it's such a belabored point that, like, I mean, it took forever for Cordelia to even know that Angel was a supernatural and that anything supernatural.
I still love that, though. I love
that
she
didn't
know.
That was cute, but she actually knew supernatural things were going on. She just didn't know about Angel specifically. So now it's like, Kate has nothing. Like, she has no knowledge here, and she just seems to always, like, talk away the point herself. Like, she'll find something really strange, and then she'll be like, oh, that's just because they were on, like, LSD. And it's like, no, they're like vampires. Come on.
Right.
It's gonna happen eventually, but maybe that'll be her death. Like, she'll find out that, like, and a spike will come after her or something. You'd be like, I got you, go, mate. And then Angel will be like, no. And she'll be like, Angel, this whole time. And then she'll die.
That sounds good. I'll buy it. but we will see what happens, I guess. Our final point in the doc is that we find out at the end of the episode that Wolfram and Hart are now going to target Angel. You know, he's gotten in their way a couple of times, and they are clearly not used to people doing that, so they're going to come after him. And you add to the doc here, we finally have a consistent and very present face to the season one villain.
Finally.
If that is indeed the season one villain, they could, of course, be faking us out. We don't know. Buffy is known to do that, at least. Thoughts? Thoughts on Wolfram and Hart potentially being the big villain of the season?
Well, then you're talking like Mr. Trick isn't the main villain, because that's kind of what happened in season 3.
Uh-huh.
If they were to do a switch up like that, and I can almost see them working that out, but it would have to be Wolfram and Hart is controlled by some giant supernatural slime monster man that needs to be moistened all the time or something.
Gross.
Yeah, I hope he doesn't come back. I hope that guy really was just boiled for good. But you know what I mean, like that kind of mob type of vampire guy who's controlling the humans around him.
Yeah, maybe. We will find out, I guess. Any other thoughts on this episode? You liked it, your fans? You're liking Angel so far?
Yeah, I definitely am enjoying Angel. It's definitely got a very different vibe, but I really love Angel and Cordy and Doyle. I think they're a really fun mix. So, yeah, I'm enjoying it so far.
Great.
I was waiting Moving for the on. Other shoe to drop with Doyle. Once it does, though, she'll.
What shoe?
The other shoe. The other shoe with Doyle.
Cordelia? Right.
The evil
like,
shoe.
The evil shoe. The evil shoe. That shoe. All right.
Lots of talk about shoes in this episode, huh? Yeah. And Cordelia has new shoes, and Angel doesn't even notice them. Come on.
I know, but Doyle does.
Doyle does.
Doyle does.
Doyle does.
Because he knows all about
shoes. Angel is so mad when he comes in and says, oh, new shoes. He's like, you were supposed to have my back.
I know.
Yeah, she gives Angel the death glare. Like, yeah. And you she, didn't like,
hits
notice.
Him.
Yeah, it's great.
I love the Angel's bickering between those flopping.
Are so good. Yeah. Yeah. It's so good to have Cordelia there.
Always flop, Angel. Always flop.
So, speaking of Angel flopping, Karen, what's your favorite scene?
Oh, man. okay, so my favorite scene is basically just Angel in the Hawaiian shirt and hat because, God, when he puts on those other personas to, like, trick out the bad guys and stuff, he really goes for the gold. And, like, yeah. Angel wouldn't act this way any other time except he's got a job to do, and by God, he's going to do it. And just the enthusiasm he has really shows off David's acting chops, but just, I don't know, endears Angel to me even more.
Mitch, yours is Angel endearing too.
Yes, mine's when that poor sad puppy breaks into the police station and wants to leave a note to say, sorry, I'll pay for it, I'll fix it, didn't mean to break your window.
And mine is also Angel in being affected by this, whatever it is, when he wants a hug from Cordelia and Doyle. And that entire scene is amazing. And them being drawn in and being like, ew, no.
I have expected Doyle to, like, sniff his coat, like, I'm so close to it.
Yes. Finally, Kristen, what is yours?
Mine is Kate's, like, breakdown at her dad's retirement party. While it's clearly the saddest part of that episode, it was so well written and well done that I was kind of shocked. Like, it comes out of nowhere, and the other cop's reaction to her, like, the one at the table who was really nice, it was so
that was
sweet.
Really that brave.
He was so supportive, that was cute. And I was like, that's really nice. And then we find out, you know, exactly what's been going on, and it all makes sense. But the scene was really well done, and the speech was really great. So,
I just want to jump in here really quickly. Sorry, because Kristen and I were talking about this, because after that beautiful speech, and then later on at the end of the episode when her father was like, you really embarrassed me, and then walks away, I'm glad the episode ended like that, because I felt like it just was fitting. Maybe I was already depressed from Wild at Heart, and it just was like, you know, bring on more. I can take it. I can handle it all. But it was just, it wasn't neatly wrapped up. And I felt really bad for Kate. Like, it didn't really, you know, sew up her character's arc for this episode that well, but it seemed true to life, I guess.
Yeah. You know, her dad is like a jerk.
It kind of tasted like the end of a Veronica Mars episode, especially in the whole procedural effects. Like, that you finally get a little bit more of the character itself after all of the rascally adventures of the episode are done. You see, like, a stinger of someone just being sad or depressed.
Yeah. Like, her kid's dad is, like, the worst character in the world. He's awful.
Well, it's tough because, I mean, he's shut out because of a death, so that's always tough to judge a character on, because you're like, I get where you're coming from, but you need to get over it, but you haven't after all these years, so you're probably not going to.
Yeah. I did think once the silver lining for Kate was that she wasn't the only one. You know, like when she did that speech, because often in television, it's like the one character is affected and they make a fool out of themselves and everyone's like, oh no! But because all the other cops were actually, like, on her, like, they were under the same spell that she was under, so, like, she's not left humiliated by this any more than they are, so they're kind of, like, you know, you don't leave Kate at the end of the episode and think, oh, like, her life is ruined because this happened, which at least is a good thing.
But what a bad wingman angel was at that party. He should have gotten her out of there. She was obviously, like, a little bit too emotional for this. Like, I think he should have stopped her after she was just, like, you know, mentioning, like, and then mom died, and I was like, oh god, Angel, please, like, what's that thing called, the hook that you bring someone off stage with?
Yeah.
I think it needed to be said, though. I'm glad that he didn't pull her away.
He didn't even try, like, he didn't even think about it. He was just like, I'm in for this, I want to hear it.
It was painful.
He likes pain, that's okay, he's a masochist.
Yeah. So, Karen, what is your favorite line?
My favorite line is when Angel is under his little spell and he punches little Tony and he says, you know, Anthony, you could be a rainbow and not a painbow because it's so terrible and yet so perfect. And I wish this was the Angel we had all the time. Although if it was, we'd get used to it and this episode wouldn't be such a standout.
I know. Oh my god. And the little air quotes he did. So perfect. And Kristen, I just realized we had the same quote, so why don't you give yours and I'll think about
it. Oh, did we really? Okay. Yeah. Well, mine is the little scene right outside the police station before they go in between Doyle, Cordy, and Angel, and Doyle says, Angel man, you've gotta snap out of this. And Cordelia says, right now, it's time for you to get all vampy. Grr, Kate needs you. And Angel says, I don't want to. You both withdraw when I go vamp. I feel you judge me.
And it's so probably good. True.
Yeah, it's so good. Yeah.
And on the topic of Angel's face, I'll just say my backup one, which I actually hadn't undeleted because I didn't see yours, which was Cordelia says, you've got pensive face. And Angel goes, I've always got pensive face.
Oh, I almost took that one because it was so great.
So good. And Mitch, what was yours?
I really appreciated that one cop at the car crash scene that just goes, you want to talk about whiplash? I'll tell you about whiplash. I have gotten emotional whiplash from having to deal with people like you day in and day out. If anyone's the victim here, it's me. I've alienated my friends, my family, my own children are afraid of me. I can't even make love to my wife.
Oh, poor emotional cops.
Yeah. Poor people, like the one mugger who's stealing from the old lady, and the guy's like, I don't think you're listening to your mugger's feelings.
I know. All that stuff was very funny. I feel like it could have been funnier than it was. I think that's what my issue. It's very understated, but I do appreciate this episode.
I thought it was just the right amount of like saccharine, like those little moments were cute.
Yeah, it's no beer bad, but it's I guess it's okay.
I also loved the random criminal sitting in the precinct at the desk where every cop is like berating each other and hitting each other and yelling. And this poor criminal sitting there just like looking around like, what the hell is happening?
And the guy,
it just cracked me up.
And the guy who was like, I've made you this poem about yes. how I feel.
Why is no one concerned about the cops that were straight up killed in this episode? Like, in the end of the episode, the conflict resolution, or the conflict still, is, like, that Kate does not have a connection with her father. Not, we need to mourn.
I know nobody cares.
The members in blue that we just lost. Everyone's just like, whatever.
Sometimes, like, red shirts on the shows are, like, it's a little bit frustrating.
Yeah, you can tell.
But, yeah. So that brings us almost to the end of the episode. We have a little bit of listener feedback to get through. If you want to leave some listener feedback spoiler-free, sharing your thoughts on Buffy and Angel up until this point, you can email rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter @re_watchable. You can find this post on hyperbole.com, and you can find us on rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And if you want to leave us a 5-star iTunes review, then Karen will hear out all of your feels and make it all better with chocolate and rum. R? I guess Karen. Okay. So there you go. You better get on that very fast.
You'd like a chocolate rum cake.
I want cake. Anyway, I want to finish because I haven't had dinner and I'm starving, and now you made me want cake, so now I'm mad. And I will tell you my feels all about it. So we have comments. And why don't you, Kristen and Karen, why don't you get them?
Hannah Long from Twitter @HannahLong831 wrote, "Anytime my fiance hands me a beer, I say, 'Beer good, foamy.'" And he sighs and shakes his head and walks away. Heart.
Aww.
Yay, Bobby quotes.
Relationship.
That's so cute.
Beer good. All right, the second one is from Elizabeth, and this was a comment she left us on Hyperbole, and she says, "Will you guys do a rewatch of Disney's Gargoyles TV series? It aired from 94 to 96.
Well, first we have to ask, is it anyone's favorite show? Maybe not.
I watched that show quite a bit as a kid.
Was it good?
I know I've seen it. I don't think I've seen every episode, but I've seen a couple.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen every episode either.
Was it like Teen Titans kind of deal?
It was, if I do recall, I think it was kind of like after Hunchback of Notre Dame, and like the gargoyles from that kind of made that series make sense, if I'm not mistaken.
Maybe.
Like, it wasn't the same gargoyles come to life and
Do they fight crime?
Yeah.
Okay. Naturally.
It's pretty cool.
It's like Teenage Mutant Ninja Gargoyles.
The long and the short of it is that we can always add that to our list. We don't know what our next show is going to be, but we're always looking for suggestions, and once we, you know, get through, like, May of 2018, and we're done with Buffy and Angel, that's not an exaggeration, then we can tackle our next Perfect. Option. Yeah.
And the final comment, Karen?
Okay, and the last one is from Lag, who says, Mitch's aspect ratio discussion a few episodes back. All of Buffy is now in 16:9 on Netflix. I just started Wild at Heart and noticed it was no longer 4:3. Upon further investigation, season 4, episodes 1 through 6, I didn't want to look beyond spoilers, the season 3 finale and the pilot are all widescreen. I assume all episodes in between and beyond are 2, but who has time to check? Someone at Netflix must be listening to Rewatchable. I don't think Netflix is listening to us.
I hope not.
But I think that it's time that, you know, they had, like, higher quality and stuff like that, and it's finally kicked in.
It's so cool that this happened. Like, I wish it had happened sooner, but it's just very awesome, and I'm, like, very curious if this is the same widescreen that has been, like, that...
It is, I think.
Who did it? Like, the terrible one that has been so slammed? This is the terrible one
that... So, don't be confused. There's a Twitter and a Facebook account out there called BuffyHD that's not an official account. It's one that bemoans the point that there are a lot of changes made to the editing, such as day scenes are now night scenes, vice versa, or even the croppings, and even some CGI is missing in strange places. Like, I know one specific moment that really got me was Buffy's meant to be in the finale of season 1 in the Master's Lair, and he's meant to be invisible and talking to her, and Buffy looks around like not seeing him, but in the remastered version that's now on Netflix, I assume, he's still in the scene, so she looks like an idiot looking around like she can't see him when he's right in front of her face, because they just didn't like green screen him out. So there are little things like that, and there's some special effects that were improved. There was a good video. I'll tell Brittany to retweet it again. That showed the issues, I guess, with the remasters, and it focused on seasons 1 through 3, so it's not spoilery for anyone that's a newbie on Buffy. So it's like, it's a good and a bad thing, because this is kind of stemming off of the conversation that I started a couple weeks back, where I was saying Buffy looks terrible these days, because the quality compared to Angel, which aired at the same time, looks so much worse. And Joss Whedon has even gone on to say that he thinks that the show should only ever be presented in 4:3. He doesn't like the 16:9 version of the show, because there are a lot of crew members in the shots, all the editing mistakes I'm mentioning, and he just says it was always meant to have letterboxes on the sides. So that's that. And yeah, watch the video. I'll have to retweet it out from the Rewatchable account so everyone else can understand the pain that you might go through from this, if you care. I don't know if I'm going to care, and I don't know if it matters past season 3.
You know
3.
What?
I think season
right,
4
you know
was
what
good.
I care about is that it looks so crisp. Like, it looks like a modern TV show now. And we'll see if there are any, like, ridiculous things that happen. I hope not.
Like the master being there when he's not supposed to be kind of stuff.
Right, the master isn't going to be in season 4. That's how bad it is. The bottom of every corner. Like, he was there all along.
That was good.
That was the big surprise, and they ruined it. He was going to come back. Anyway.
It's mostly, no, I think he's, mostly it's
he's the
Ger
R, you know, at the end. What?
It's mostly cropping issues. Like they had to crop the head space of characters, or sometimes they zoomed in to create the widescreen as opposed to cropping, which is a different scenario altogether. So that sometimes misses the action of the shot, oddly enough. Like, I remember there was one that the video points out that Darla flares her skirt at Angel at one point, but you don't see it in the in the zoomed in version or something. So, I mean, it's like a purist versus an everyday kind of thing. So I'm in between the purists and the everyday man for the show.
The thing we had on Netflix up until now wasn't the purist version, because, like you said, it was a zoomed in version of the original. So
no. The 4:3 version was the purist version.
Oh right, but it was still zoomed in though. Mm-mm. Like the thing we were watching on Netflix was not the actual thing.
That was
like,
what aired on TV, as far as I understood.
Okay, I'm pretty sure it wasn't. Like, I'm pretty sure what we saw on Netflix before now.
There are some
now,
listeners
was...
who are really in tune with this. They'll be able to tweet at us and tell us what it used to be. You know, maybe I think that was the purest version. Maybe Joss Whedon will react to all this, actually, because now his show, he'll probably
he's
get
not
wind
on
of
Twitter
it.
Anymore.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
He doesn't have any. And he's not coming back. He told me at Comic-Con, not personally, he was like speaking to 3,000 people, but I was there, so I feel like, you know... We were close. Since the last podcast, I've seen Joss Whedon in the flesh.
He can still
up
interview.
Close, guys. I feel
interview.
So blessed. Hashtag blessed.
You've also seen two of us right here in the flesh.
I know.
You feel
hashtag Have you blessed. Made a show that I love? No, okay. Well, I know. I'm kidding. But yeah,
well,
it was very exciting.
I'm kind of for the CRISPR show. I'm like, I
think
I'm more
agree.
I'm
for the CRISPR show.
I'll take the editing mistakes here and now, and I'll take the cropping issues even. I'll even take the crew members in the shots to have a CRISPR show, because it was very painful to get through the show sometimes. I would zoom in my TV. I would make it widescreen by like cropping it myself anyways.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. But
so,
yeah, no,
same
I
thing
agree.
At the end of the day.
So far, I prefer it looking like TV does now, because it makes me feel like I'm watching a newer show as opposed to watching like a 90s show. And I know like we're not in the 90s anymore in season 4, but I'm still happy that it looks
updated. Oh, it's 2000, isn't it, from the show?
Yeah, we are. We're almost at the time Gilmore Girls starts.
I thought so too, because I was wondering, you know, I was wondering about...
Not that that matters.
No, I was wondering about Charisma Carpenter, because I know that she goes on to do Veronica Mars for not too big of a role, but she does that in the middle... of what would be Angel. So I'm wondering if that might designate her exit from the show, or maybe she did both shows at the same time. So I know that this is the era we're coming up on.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. We will see. But yeah, so let's wrap up the show now before we get too long over with Mitch's musings / Kristen's predictions.
Cremuzzling?
For episode 7 of Buffy the Initiative and of Angel the Bachelor Party.
The Initiative. That must be like someone is taking the initiative to take someone in or to do something with them romantically, perhaps. Maybe this is like, I don't know, like we already had Xander do this like a million times to Buffy, so I don't think it's his initiative. It could be like an evil initiative, or it could be a romantic initiative. Those are my thoughts there.
I'm going to guess that the initiative is the name of the group of people who have been kidnapping people. Like vamps.
That's a good name for them.
Because, like, that's a good name. And if they're the initiative and they're, like, you know, trying to make Sunnydale safer and, you know, one vampire abduction at a time, you know, like, maybe that's their thing. So that's what I'm going for that one.
I mean, now Willow's an open woman, so maybe she's single, ready to mingle, and someone takes the initiative toward her. I don't know. That could be kind of sassy and fun. But you know, she's just getting out of Oz, so I hope she takes some time. And then Angel 107, the bachelor party. I hope we see drunk Angel again. That's always fun. And maybe who's getting married though? This has to be like this has to be just a serialized moment, or not serialized, whatever it is, episode of the week kind of deal. Where there's, I mean, what's the supernatural thing here though, Kristen? What's supernatural about the bachelor party? We already had like beer bad, so the alcohol's not going to turn them into Neanderthals again, right?
I was going to say I have no idea what the supernatural equivalent is, but I really want Cordelia to have to pick up drunk Doyle and Angel and like drive them back to the office or something. Like, I think that would be funny. So I have no idea what the supernatural part of
the bachelor party, because there's no character really that's getting married on the show that we know of.
I mean, demon stripper, sure.
Demon stripper. Sure, oh, I can kind of dig that. Kind of like there was like an X-Men First Class or Days of Future Past. I think there was the one lady with the wings. Remember,
she Angel. Tattoos
Angel. So I can kind of imagine that deal. Like someone that's someone that comes in. And it's kind of like they eat your soul as they give you a lap dance or something.
It would be weird, but hey, you know, demon
whatever.
Why not?
Yeah. So, I think that's everything. Thanks for your predictions. They were very interesting. We shall see next week if they were correct. And I think, you know, we'll leave you with that. Let us know what you thought of these two episodes of Buffy and Angel and what your thoughts are on next week's episodes, The Initiative and The Bachelor Party. Until next time, my name is Selena.
I'm Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Mitch.
Goodbye. I'm taking the initiative to say goodbye.
You're taking the initiative. Bye.